In this podcast, we're sharing insights and reflections from a panel of South Sudanese scholars, practitioners, and activists who came together for a webinar organized by the Conflict Research Program at the beginning of July 2020. The panel has been meeting with CRP researchers on an annual basis for the past 3 years to discuss ongoing research on questions of conflict and peace in South Sudan, to strengthen the bonds between South Sudanese thought leaders, and to review and inform the work of the CRP. This year, COVID-19 was inevitably on our agenda. As the COVID-19 pandemic holds the world at a precarious standstill, serious questions remain over what this means for the relationship between citizens and states in Africa. This is perhaps more relevant in South Sudan, where the outbreak of the virus has exacerbated the humanitarian crisis and stalled the implementation of the revitalized peace agreement, further entrenching long-standing systems of poverty, inequality, and impunity. I'm your host, David Deng, and welcome to the Conflict Research Program South Sudan panel, where we'll be exploring the role South Sudanese scholars and public intellectuals play in shaping the country amid these overarching challenges. Today, we'll be hearing from two researchers in the field. Dr. Augustino Ting, the Director of Research at the Sud Institute, will tell us about the ongoing effects of the pandemic in South Sudan, while Angelina Sika Daniel, a human rights activist and executive director of End Impunity Organization, will explore the challenges facing South Sudanese refugees in Egypt.
Great. So let's just go ahead and kick off this first panel. I think a great lineup of presentations that get into some of the micro and macro impacts of COVID. And I think as we've all seen, this COVID pandemic has really brought to the surface many of the fractures within societies, and South Sudan is no exception. So I think these presentations will give us a glimpse into that. And now I'll invite Augustino to come in, and I think he's going to now take another step back and give us some of the broader trends of the pandemic within South Sudan. Augustino, over to you.
Thank you, everyone. Augustino Tingmayai, it's my name. I am happy to highlight some of the findings that we have put out in the last 3 months after the outbreak arrived in South Sudan. And so I'll be looking at a more general perspective as far as the impact of COVID-19 in South Sudan. More generally, this presentation, it has two objectives. One, to highlight more generally the effects of COVID-19 in South Sudan and focuses more generally on infections and fatalities, but also looking at the political aspect of this, focusing on the economy and what that means for a political system that operates using patronage networks. And so let's look at the infections, looking at the number of cases being confirmed since April. We have nearly about 2,000 cases reported in the last 3 months. This number tells us that there has been an infection rate of about 12% per day. Majority of the cases are concentrated in central Equatoria and eastern Equatoria, and this means that we haven't really done much as far as testing in other areas. The reason is that Juba, it's a headquarters of the government, and you have normally being the central hub for trade between South Sudan and Uganda, and so there's a testing that is taking place there. And as a result, you have more cases being concentrated in the two regions. What is important, and this is troubling for South Sudan, is that majority of the cases are symptomatic. Over 90% of our COVID-19 patients do not have any symptoms at all. And this has created a situation where people don't believe that COVID-19 exists. Based on my recent review of the data we have in the system, 36 people have died of COVID-19. But I don't think the statistics that we have in the books are accurate. So many people have died in the last 8 weeks that it was very difficult to explain how this correlates with the current pandemic. And of course, families are saying, and some doctors are saying, these people are dying of heart attack or something else. This means that mortality in this case stands at around 1.4%. Majority of the people who are dying are older folks, people older than 59, experiencing up to 2,000% mortality rate compared to those who are younger. The female population in this case is insulated, and they are 44% less likely to die of the pandemic. Individuals with pre-existing health conditions are most likely to die. This brings me to the economy. Trade and firms have been affected as a result of this. And so in the last few months, South Sudan has seen a declining trade between its neighbors and itself. And this means our import sector has been disrupted and the firms are responding by either increasing the prices or reducing operation or doing both. What we have seen based on our analysis in March was that at least 60% of the basic food items were seeing an increase in price. Employment, both in the private and public sectors, has been affected. People have been laid off or their hours have been reduced. Some of the businesses have actually closed down. The wages, especially in the public sector, have not changed, in addition to the fact that they are delayed anyways. The supply chains, which provided support for small firms, is not working for most companies. And that means jobs being lost, and it means income that is lost. Public spending is affected as well. South Sudan depends largely on oil proceeds. The notable thing about this is that the collection of taxes has also been disrupted, and the government currently struggles to settle the wage bill as well as paying off militia. So what does this mean? The government has responded using two policies. One is the curfew and social distancing. The second one is reducing operation hours for businesses. The last one is only suffocating the economy. So what does this mean? It means that the health system that we have, fragile as it is, it's overwhelmed, and South Sudan is increasingly becoming a regional epicenter for the outbreak. It also means lack of resources stalls the implementation of the agreement, especially the key provisions. And finally, this has to be noted in terms of political marketplace that was sustaining political patronage networks in the absence of an encompassing budget is going to be difficult, and that affects stability and peace in the country.
Thank you, Augustino. So I think on that note, I can hand over to Angelina, who will give us another example from among refugee communities in Egypt about the impact that the pandemic is having.
And the issue of the impact of the COVID-19 on South Sudanese refugees in Egypt, how this affect the South Sudanese refugees in area of humanitarian support and how they have access to the health facilities and so on. According to the UNHCR, the number of South Sudanese refugees in Egypt is 19,827. The South Sudanese refugees, the third asylum seeker after Syrian and Sudan refugees. The effect of the COVID-19 on the refugees following the outbreak of the coronavirus or COVID-19, in Egypt, the government are taking the measure, including the lockdown, then self-isolation and social distance. South Sudanese in Egypt, most of them, they are people who they are working their domestic work in the Egyptian house or in some company. But with the lockdown and the COVID-19, the people started staying at home and lockdown. Even some employees released the workers from their houses because they are fear of this COVID-19. So it become difficult for South Sudanese refugees how they can help their family in this situation, the medical support to them. The situation was getting serious. And all the communities, refugees, they were looking at the UNHCR, the UN agency, how they will come up with some emergency or preventive measure that they can help put in place during this period, especially to access the health and economic security. So, as a leader, they already raised the alarm that the impact of the virus on refugees or an asylum seeker can be very difficult. The UNHCR, the UN agency, they were not ready, actually. So the leader from different refugees community, not only South Sudanese community, they communicate with the UNHCR and they start linking up together, creating an online communication link with the community leader where they can help with the information. It is only to communicate the information to the leader so that also they can reach their people in the ground. So they give training to the leadership on how they can cope up with the situation and how they can deal with the individual people in the community if somebody needs assistance. But UNHCR, they also create the Facebook and WhatsApp group and all this. It is just about linking and share the information. But it could not help the real situation in the ground where the people are suffering a humanitarian lack of food and these kind of things. All the communication is online. And the UNHCR also, they lock their office. There is no activities taking place like a registration of the new refugees or interview and all these things. It's all up. So the communication for essential services read like the sexual and gender-based violence and child protection and counseling is going only on the phone. And also all the registration of refugees, discrimination and resettling, everything is stopped. It. So the UNHCR also conducted the online basic health support training to the leader. So they have to be ready and empower their capacity to know how to deal with the people. The UN agency WFP that help people with the food, they change it from getting food to the cash that the refugees can get through money transfer. Another issue of the challenges facing the refugees during the pandemic is that access to the health facility. It was very difficult for the refugees to go to the hospital and receive any health care. So the community raised a complaint and the government response was that any foreign in the soil of Egypt must receive the treatment. But still, we have seen many cases that they just rejected from getting the treatment, and it is a lot of challenges. We see the positive response from the community outside, like in the diaspora in US. The community there, they collect the money and send, especially Western Barkazal group, they send to Fertit community and Luo community. They select like 48 families to receive amount of 400 Egyptian pounds. It's very little, but it can make a change in this different situation. And some local organization of women also, they get some package of food to help their members. And it was good to see that initiative coming also from outside, from South Sudanese refugees.
Great. Thank you so much, Angelina. I think that was a very nice compliment to the first presentations. And thank you so much to the presenters for those great and succinct perspectives on COVID from the micro level up to the macro level. And I think now we can pivot into our question and comment period. And I think maybe just in framing that, I'll pick up from where Augustino left off and encourage us to think about the political dimensions of COVID a bit more. This clearly started as a health crisis, and then the response in terms of lockdowns has had this economic impact, but it doesn't stop there. There are also political impacts. And thinking about what has the experience of the last month done for people's trust in government, and what has the restricted space for people to move also done for the government's presence throughout the country and giving rise to kind of vacuums of power. Some point to these vacuums of power as being behind the increase in intercommunal violence, for example. Let's think both about the impact and what that tells us about society, but also thinking about the broader political context. So now for the question and answer, I think we'll just do one round. So we'll get all of these questions and then we'll give one round to the presenters. Rachel.
Hi, thank you for those very interesting and disturbing presentations. I wanted to ask you about the perceptions of the international humanitarian response, what the humanitarians are doing, what do they think of this response, including based on Angelina's account of what's happened in Egypt and the blocking of the UNHCR office.
Thanks, Rachel. Luca.
Really, thank you very much. I appreciate it. In Africa, in the other African countries, we are seeing COVID-19 becoming a human rights crisis. It would be good if you can highlight the role of the international community, especially the World Health Organization, in assisting the government in responding to the COVID-19, especially the traditional approach to responding to the COVID-19 and how the citizens have been engaging on that. Just a bit of highlight about the relation between citizen and the state in responding to the COVID-19 and the role of the international community.
Tom?
My question to Dr. Agostino is about the testing capacity, whether the Center for COVID-19 was able to accommodate all the patients that were supposed to be tested, because most of the people that were tested in South Sudan were the travelers, which is good, and they were tested. But the other people who are resident in the country were not rich for testing, which was actually very worrying. If you look at the death rate in South Sudan, why the number of people who are tested is very small.
Thank you, Tom. So I think we can go to the panel now, starting with Angelina and Augustino. Angelina.
The refugees in Egypt, up to now, the cases are raised among South Sudanese because of lack of treatment. And we have seen a lot of people who lost their life. South Sudanese people don't bury their people here in Egypt. They have to carry it home to South Sudan. A lot of dead body was carried. And this situation, South Sudanese is still trying to carry the dead body home. And it is really a painful situation, but this is what's happening. Maybe the time after the formation of this government in South Sudan, maybe there is some refugees willing to go back home. I'm sure not all of them are willing to go, but what is the policy and from the government regarding the refugees and IOM as an international organization for migration? That question will just be hanging up like this. I don't know, but I really wish you can see the better situation for refugees, because they cannot continue living in this situation, and not all of refugees willing to go abroad to another places, especially after this worldwide health crisis that's happening right now.
Thanks, Angelina. Augustino.
Tom, thank you very much. You are perfectly right as far as the capacity of the ministry and the country to test for COVID-19. That is no longer working. Today, I met with one of the scientists at the lab, and basically everything is faltering. And that is probably a result of the fact that the ministry is entirely overwhelmed. The ministry basically not having money to pay the folks that are in the field doing the testing or collecting the samples. You will also recall that in my report, I spoke of burial sources as a place for a great deal of infection. People are still congregating in hundreds and hundreds of numbers. As you know, our tradition around this issue. So it's very tough to say South Sudan is not experiencing COVID-19, because that's what the recent statistics tell us. What I'm seeing right now is that the government is going to be suffocated in terms of fiscal responsibilities, with reduction both in the oil and non-oil revenues. I just see that there would be difficulty in government choosing between health and investing in peace. And all of this need money. So the international system is involved in supporting the country. The WHO and CDC have been there since day one. The statistics that I have on funding coming from donors is that we have about $40 million spent in South Sudan in the last 3 months towards fighting COVID-19. What I see clearly, though, is lack of coordination, as we have always seen with international support. The testing center continues to struggle living with these resources in place to execute the test and to pay some of the guys that are working there every day. So we have some resources, but just not enough.
Good. Thank you so much, Augustino, and the panel, and everyone for the great succinct questions. I think that has given us a good orientation on COVID. Thank you to all our presenters, panelists, and participants for these inputs. These perspectives on COVID show us that the long-term effects of the disease will present a serious challenge to efforts to stabilize the world's youngest nation, both economically and politically. In our CRP panel discussions, we also learned how South Sudan's universities are struggling to cope with the pandemic. As Dr. Levin Morrow of University of Juba put it, the upsurge in the spread of COVID-19 has shed light on the poor state of education in the country, especially higher education. This matters all the more because evidence-based policy decisions and South Sudanese thought leadership are central to laying the foundation for lasting peace and security. While vaccines and cures may be just over the horizon, it will take much longer to heal the damage that decades of conflict have done to South Sudan.
This Justice Network's podcast was supported by a Conflict Research Programme small grant held by Dr. Rachel Ebreck at Goldsmiths, University of London. The CRP is an international research consortium led by the LSE and funded by the UK Department for International Development. However, any views expressed do not necessarily reflect the UK government's policies. David Deng was our host, and David Meffey was our editor. We thank all the members of the Conflict Research Programme South Sudan panel for their contributions.